calls to mind the silver screen and all its sad goodbye.
I'm never gonna dance again. Guilty feet have got no rhythm, though it's easy to pretend. I know you're not a fool. Should have known better than to cheat a friend and waste the chance that I'd been given. So I'm never gonna dance again the way I danced with you.
Live from somewhere deep below the earth, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, dial 800-618-8255. From east of the Rockies, dial 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George by dialing area code 818-501-4721. International callers may reach George by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free, 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
And we're going to take your phone calls now with our three special guests, William Henry, Glenn Kimball, Warren Gettler. When you call in, just address to whom you'd like to ask the question to, and I'll be back in a moment with your calls. Warren, William, and Glenn, before we go to the phones, I want each of you to be able to get your website out and pass on some information to the multitudes that listen to the program. Warren, why don't you go first?
Sure. We have Rebel Gold is the name of our paperback. You can get it on Amazon.com. Just type in Rebel Gold, and the hardcover is called Shadow of the Sentinel. I don't mind people emailing me, Gettler, G-E-T-L-E-R, 99, at AOL.com if you have questions, and I can get back to you, okay?
William Henry.
Thank you, George. Yeah, visitors can come to williamhenry.net. My books in particular on this subject are The Atomic Christ and also City of Peace, and it's my desire to offer to the Coast listeners, anybody that orders from this show, just say, hey, I was listening to Coast, and I'll send you a free copy of my brand-new lecture DVD, Stargate 2012. I have a phone number, too. That's 615-292-7863, and I hope you'll come to my site, check out my upcoming Egypt trip and all kinds of special events coming up.
Excellent. And you, Glenn?
My website's www.ancientmanuscripts.com, and I think the key to understanding the Templars is the 37 years just following the death of Christ and the riches that went to the West. And that's contained in my CD called AD After the Death of Christ. And it's available there. And my telephone number is on the website, too, for those who wanted to talk to me. And there's some specials there as well. And I just wanted to say what fun it's been to be with these two gentlemen. I've enjoyed it very much.
Likewise, Glenn. Thank you.
Let's go to the phones now and really enjoy ourselves. Let's go to our wild card line where the first call is going to be for you, Warren Gettler. Hi there. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name's Alan. I'm calling from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Hello, Alan. Go ahead for your question for Warren.
All right, Warren. I just had some information. There's supposedly some mines that the Mormons used when they first came to Utah to pay for, like, the Salt Lake City Temple. They also have, like, an angel Moroni on top of the temple. It's made out of gold entirely. And I guess there's a man named Caleb Rhodes who would go out with the Indians to these mines and said that there was enough gold there to pave the streets of New York with gold. And he actually he petitioned the U.S. Congress to try to take a land lease out and in exchange pay the national debt. But have you ever heard of anything like that?
Alan, there's a couple of websites on the Internet that talk about, their treasure website, that talk about a lot of things going on in Utah.
Links
to the Knights of the Golden Circle or, you know, Freemasonry and Smith's possible links there. I don't know personally. It's not something I've actually researched, but you can find some of this on the Internet and start researching. I think it's a fascinating trail.
How did you get involved in this treasure hunt, Warren?
Well, I used to be a senior writer at Discovery Channel, and I was lecturing at a university in Oklahoma about what I do. And these women came up, and after I presented to the class, talked about Jesse James' treasure being taken off their property, and they showed a videotape of these gold coins being taken from their property. Well, the guy who had given these women the tape was my eventual co-author, Bob Brewer, who had turned the tape in saying he apologized for trespassing, his partner hadn't told him, and that he'd help the women find the bigger gold that was on their property if they met with him. So I asked to meet this guy. I came to him. He didn't come to me. And he started telling me, just hold your hat, kid, because I've got a hell of a story to tell you if you're patient. You can walk the line with me, and I did over 7 years. And it was just an amazing quest of discovery for me. I was out there with him in the archives and in the field. We dug up hearts, these symbols that are being found at these treasure sites that are found in Oak Island. He showed me his gold coins, and we took it from there. We were just on Nightline on Friday with the big show, and the Washington Post just ran a story about us this Sunday.
Well done. West of the Rockies, you're up on Coast to Coast. And who's your question for?
Hi, this is Bill from Tucson. My question is for William.
Sure thing.
I wanted to make a brief comment and then a question, William. I believe you mentioned the universal symbology, which basically links all of the religions of the major religions of the world into this this system of gematria. And I've been doing probably 90% research on what you're all talking about tonight. And I've discovered that the 12th layer of the pyramid structure itself is the title of Rex, which is the title of Pontifex Maximus. And there is one place on planet Earth right now where all of the universal symbology of everything that all three of you gentlemen have been talking about can be found. And it's within the structure of the Latin word Vatican, which in Latin means the divining serpent. And it is the title of the Pontifex Maximus, the Pope himself, who wears the holy sacred ephod of Babylon around his neck, and he's the only one on planet Earth that has that. And I just wondered, have you done any research into the Vaticanus?
Well, of course, and I've also, in my book, Cloak of the Illuminati, wrote about the power garments worn by various prophets throughout history, Elijah, Enoch, possibly even John the Baptist. And the way that I interpret this is that the garments worn by the Pope are actually, in my view, more symbolic than they are actually the power garments that we're referring to. I just see just tremendous example after example of the way all of the prophets have attempted to tap into this universal source of consciousness, and their ability to tap into that is often reflected symbolically by the garments that they wear. For example, the fish hat worn by the Pontifex Maximus, by the Pope, is actually an ancient Sumerian symbol, and it's a reference to the Sumerian god Ea, or Enki. And it's thought to have some form of a, perhaps even a communications capability. And I know that Glenn has also spoken frequently and written about the Pontifex Maximus, so I'm going to ask Glenn if he'd like to comment on this as well.
Well, I think you do a much better job of talking about the mysticism than I do, and for that I have deep respect for you, William. My comment is that the vestments, we go back to ancient Greek, for example, and when Jason was looking for the golden fleece, remember what the golden fleece represented. The golden fleece, or the golden ram skin, was symbolic of the priestly robes worn by Melchizedek. And so, even getting into Rumi and the vestments of the Shams of Tabriz and Rumi, these vestments were in common and extend all the way through the Knights Templar as well, the robes, the aprons that they wore in their ceremonies, and the vestments that were used by not only the Knights Templar, but the crusading knights under Richard the First and et cetera, were all symbolic of the same kind of vestments. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, the Templars, for example, wore a rope, and that it's thought that this rope itself even had healing capabilities. But again, this is a symbol. This is a symbol of an actualized human being, a person who knows the secrets of transforming an ordinary human into a higher being. And that, once again, is ultimately the primary treasure of the Templars. It's all about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness that we all take for granted on a daily basis. We have no idea in America what a revolutionary idea it was to give the average individual access to the sacred mysteries, access to this knowledge that we're describing. And it's a kind of a commentary on our state right now that we are not doing so. Instead, we have, maybe 9/10 of the population that has zero awareness of what we're describing tonight, but yet this is the focal point of our times, the ability of the individual to transform themselves into a being that was once only dreamed about.
Yeah, that's where the expression, as above, so below, comes from in that sense.
East of the Rockies, you're up now on Coast to Coast. Who's your question for?
Yes, my name is John. I live in Liberty, Missouri, and this question is for Mr. Kimball and
right.
The panel as a whole, whoever wants to answer it. And that is, I was wondering if they're aware of the Luciferian nature of the mysteries of this of these conspirators, and that Mr. Pike was an espoused Luciferian who wrote a letter that was on display in the Royal Museum for several decades to a Mason named Mazzini, in which the three world wars were laid out, and obviously the two have happened, but the third world war was to occur in the Middle East, which is, of course, happening right now. And I also must say that according to all the prophets, the Messiah of these men will be the Antichrist. And I guess I just wonder if you'll comment on that.
We'll get your reaction, Glenn. Thank you, John.
Well, I think that there's, you know, certainly the all-seeing eye was the was a description of seeing good and evil, and I think that you could take a view of the Knights Templar and their symbology and look at it both as the an illumination of the Luciferian traditions as well as the Messianic traditions. And I happen to agree with this gentleman that it's very common for people to take one side or the other. I think it's more beneficial to look at both sides of this and to fulfill the actual intent of the all-seeing eye, which was to look at the good and evil and arrive at better understanding. And I think William would agree with me on that.
All right, very good. Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing? My name is Jason. I'm calling from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
Hi, Jason.
I got a question, but first I got a comment. First, I want to say it's awesome getting in. It only took me 12 months. But I think I finally got it down. I think I know how to get through more often now.
Don't give away the secret.
No, right. I won't, because then I'll never be able to get in.
Yeah, you got that right. Who's your question for, Jason?
My question's for Warren. If I'm wrong on this, correct me, but I believe it was Warren that was talking about the gold being guarded by the guys with the guns.
Yes.
Okay. My question on that is, why hasn't the government done anything about it, or do they not know about it, or are they working with these people?
That's a great question. Again, it's one that can't be answered with any kind of conclusiveness, but I'll just say that my colleague got notification from somebody that the government was snooping around for this under some sort of cover, if you will, in one area. So I think the government is probably interested in it. Let me just say this, that whenever Jesse James's gold has been discovered in the past, according to our research at the Library of Congress and the National Archives, an FBI van turns up and takes the money. Because, again, most of this money that's buried is federal money. It was stolen by the KGC. And, you know, they have a claim on it in some sense. Insurance companies could have a claim on it. And all I can tell you is it would be my guess that the government would be interested in getting these KGC mega depositories.
If you had to guess, Warren, and that's only what this is, how many millions or billions of dollars worth of treasure gold are tucked away in this country?
I don't know. My own personal estimate would be hundreds of millions or more. An article in the L.A., I'm forgetting the name, L.A. Examiner, it's no longer in existence, had $100 billion in KGC money buried in America. That was a 1974 article.
And as gold goes up, so does that price, right?
That's right. I mean, this is valuable money because it has historic and numismatic value, not just the specie value, the actual printed money on the coin. So it's extremely valuable.
Next up, Wild Card Line, you are on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, Joe calling from Austin. A question for William Henry on the,
sure, Joe.
The back of the dollar bill, the pyramid, I've noticed something that I've never heard commented on before. Down at the base, if you look at the pyramid on the left side, it's dark, as if a shadow's falling over it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if you look at the base of the pyramid, just above about 2 o'clock from the inn in Novus, there's a little figure down there, and to me, it looks like an owl, and that, of course, makes me think of Moloch and Bohemian Grove.
There is an owl on the front of the dollar bill as well, so I can't detect it on the bill that I'm looking at right now, but I see what you're saying. I see the outline of the figure that you're describing. I know it has one side is light, the other side is dark, representing the duality. And ultimately, right, the owl does symbolize Minerva, the goddess, and also ultimately wisdom as well. So very interesting comment.
Yeah, it helps if you get a jeweler's loop or a good magnifying glass, and it pops up pretty clear.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind adding that, you know, in some of the coded maps that we've seen related to the KGC, an owl is very apparent there looking in a certain direction.
Someone emailed me and said that if you can look at the eye with a magnifying glass, it will look like a reptilian eye.
It's also just like the logo of the movie Stargate. They centered that movie on the pyramid, and of course the gateway opens, and just above that it says Argo, which is the ship of the gods, which is of course a gateway or a wormhole.
I'm a little depressed that I have more dollars with these pyramids than 50s or 10s. Why did they change the back of the bills? How come they didn't all stay the same?
Well, in particular, the $1 bill, I can tell you that it was, in my view, like raising a flag up the pole that told Hitler, hey, or to those in the know, that they were successful in their expedition to Mongolia to retrieve the secrets of the Grail. Now, whether or not that included the reincarnated Jesus or not, we can't say for certain, but it did suggest that America is open for business in terms of the second coming is concerned, and that is, in fact, the business of America. It's the American enterprise, if you will. Its goal is to bring about this kingdom of heaven on earth, and that's the role of each American citizen, is to contribute to this idea of the spreading of liberty and the pursuit of happiness. And that's something, once again, that we all need to cherish and to really think about in terms of what that means into our personal lives.
Do you think the people, either one of you who heads up the Federal Reserve, like Greenspan, do you think they might be part of the Knights Templar? Who wants that?
I don't have any data on that. Maybe someone else can answer that.
Warren? Glenn?
I think he ought to be president of the United States. That's my opinion.
You like him that much?
I really do.
All right. That's interesting. He's part of the secret societies, though, Glenn, isn't he?
Perhaps so, and I want to know his secret because he's kept this country balanced for a long time.
Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Go ahead with your question, please.
Hello. Masons are always seeking light. Who has this light? Now, in Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma on page 321, he says that it's Lucifer.
How about a question? Who are you addressing to? Glenn. Anybody in particular? Glenn?
Glenn. Well, Lucifer's real original name was Son of the Morning, or the Son of Light. And anciently, the philosophy was that he was the brightest of all the sons of the gods, and that's part of the reason why his fall in the pre-existent earth was so great, was that he was so intelligent. But once again, my comment to everyone here is that the real purpose of mortality was not to gain knowledge, because we knew more before we came here. The real purpose of this earth itself was to understand the difference between good and evil. And the fact that Lucifer was intelligent is just part of that process of understanding the reason that the prime directive of the universe is goodness and not evil.
We'll be back with our three guests and your final phone calls in a moment. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
But I am still around. I'll always be around.
Sign up for StreamLink at www.coasttocoastam.com. And you can hear tonight's show over and over and over.
I fly a starship across the universe divide. And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again. Or I may simply be a single drop of rain, but I will remain. I'll be back again and again and again and again.
Somewhere deep below the earth, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, dial 800-618-8255. From east of the Rockies, dial 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George by dialing area code 818-501-4721. International callers may reach George by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
Well, maybe there is a lot of symbolism on these dollars. Danny from Baytown, Texas says, right-hand corner, front side of a dollar bill. Very small. You'll see a spider in the right-hand corner. Man, I'm going to have to go get a microscope for this one. We'll be back in a moment with our guests and your final questions right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Warren, how close is National Treasure, the movie, to reality?
Well, the founding fathers were interested in creating a nation that was, you know, in going to create a land of liberty and equality and fraternity, as it suggests. Maybe they did have some inkling of treasure somewhere, but I think the backstory of the Templars being a force that led to the creation of America is a possibility through what we talked about before, Bacon's vision, the Rosicrucians, the atmosphere that they come out of. But the idea of them having this huge treasure, if you've seen the movie, that was brought over from the Middle East, from Egypt, Israel, wherever, is a little bit far-fetched for me.
All right, now you talked earlier about Oak Island, Nova Scotia. Why is that so important here?
Well, Oak Island's important because there could be some sort of treasury, the monetary or spiritual, that let's say academic, that was buried there. Maybe not by the Templars themselves. It could have been brought over, say, in the 1600s as opposed to the 1300s. And the symbolism there, that the artifacts that have been found there, the inscriptions and the artifacts in the shaft are very similar to the layouts that we've been finding of the KGC, the Neo-Templar. So for me, it's hugely fascinating. And of course, the National Treasure movie has a kind of combination of KGC background and Oak Island background to it.
To the phones we go. Let's go to our first-time caller line. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi, George. Yeah, great show as always. I just wanted to let you know I'm calling from Lihue, Kauai. It's a beautiful night tonight.
Oh,
my question was for William. How many versions of the greenback have been printed through the history since we've converted from silver to gold?
I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that trivia question.
Oh, really?
Warren, would you know that answer?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Wow. I was kind of stunned. I thought somebody would have knew that answer.
And I don't. But because you got through, any other follow-up questions that you want to ask any of them?
Well, no, I'm just excited to see the movie. I hear it's a really good show. So
I do have another comment, though, George.
Thanks, Mike.
After Henry Wallace and Nicholas Roerich and FDR reenacted the archetypal drama of the three wise men looking for the reincarnated Jesus and the secrets of the Grail, it was Wallace's desire to become Secretary of Commerce. And this was because he understood, I feel, the power of money as a symbolic vehicle. Most people don't realize that every time you hold that dollar bill in your hand, you're holding what is called a magic sigil that connects you to the magical symbolism that's contained on that mystery school book that we call the $1 bill. And it's very interesting to note that the symbols that we find that are so rampant throughout the ancient world were collected, for example, by the Cathars, and it's actually the Secret Service that is the largest collector of watermarks and ancient symbolism in the world. And it's alleged that they are collectors of this, these symbols, to combat counterfeiting. But I would suspect that there may be an even more profound reason for that.
Glenn, you know, as we talk about these various issues with regards to the Knights Templar, it still baffles me that they've been able to do whatever they do with this shroud of secrecy. How come this hasn't been publicized in the mainstream media?
Well, like I've suggested many times, I don't think it's quite secrecy as much as sacredcy. And Warren was right. The people at the top know the difference between something sacred and something secret. When you get to the very top level of both politics, monetary movement, banking, etc., as well as religion, things make a lot more sense, and you cross over the arbitrary boundary lines of politics and economies and religions. We at the bottom sometimes are separated by what we're told and what we understand. I don't think that things are as secret as we think they are. Certainly, for example, on my website, I've collected hundreds of texts written by the masters in history that speak about these topics. And if you were lucky enough to have read them all, you would have quite an open, you'd find out that this information is quite open and quite prevalent. I've often said that all you need is a good library card and you can find out almost anything.
George, I'd like to answer that too, if I may.
Sure, go ahead, Warren.
I think there are two reasons. It's too darn complicated, what we're talking about, to kind of put in a neat box. And secondly, there's just some, you know, for every theory, and we've been talking mostly about theories, there's an alternative theory that you can put forward. And the academics and the media, and I come from established media, you know, want to have hard facts, and I try and stick to that. So where there's always an alternative theory that could explain your necessary but not sufficient condition for proving this, then you've got a problem. So we're in that incredibly intriguing area of mystery and logical conclusions, but there's not enough hard proof to get a lot of people excited. However, with movies like National Treasure and The Da Vinci Code coming out, the public consciousness is more and more aware of this amazing story of the Templars and their role in Europe and now potentially in America. The Europeans have known more about the Templars than we have, but that's slowly beginning to change.
Well, that's true. Let's go
east.
There's another
great show coming out on TNT. My buddy David Titcher wrote it. It's called The Librarian. And the premise is that this person presumes that he's applying for a job at the New York Library, and he's actually applying for a job to as the curator of the relics the United States government has stolen from other countries.
Oh, that's a great show.
And it sounds like it's going to be absolutely fantastic. I think it debuts on December 5th on TNT, so that'll be kind of nice. And he's got some nice Oak Island stuff in there and tips his hat to FDR and some of the research that I was doing, so I appreciate what David's doing.
Back to the phones, east of the Rockies. Hi there.
Good morning, Mr. Norrie.
Good morning to you, and who is your question for?
I believe Warren, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm from the Delmarva Peninsula out on the East Coast. There's an urban legend around here of a swamp area where a Confederate high-ranking officer killed his slave and buried a huge treasure in gold. He cut his slave's head off to guard the gold. Is that just an urban legend, or is that like any truth behind that to hide gold from the, for the Confederacy?
I wouldn't know. I don't know enough about that particular case, but there is a lot of urban legend mixed in with real stories. But the KGC did have cover stories, usually about Indians attacking a wagon load of Spanish treasure or whatnot, or Union troops. And it usually involves that kind of tale. That was a cover story to alert their people that there is a depository in that area, but they used a cover story to kind of throw people off. The most interesting thing about your area is the so-called Beale treasure, which everybody's heard about, and it involves references to the Declaration of Independence, to Thomas Jefferson, and I believe that is a KGC treasure involving a man who worked with Pike named Caleb Cushing. Very interesting guy, because if you look in his files at the Library of Congress, he owned mining interests in Bedford County, Virginia, where the so-called Beale treasure is. It's a famous code, the Beale Code, and it's very much this kind of code, Baconian cipher and whatnot, that the KGC used.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, appreciate it. By the way, Spike Mike from the Fantastic Forum has sent me an email with some incredible pictures that he's taken, close-ups of a dollar bill, and you'll see the owl in one, the great seal in another, and it's really strange stuff. I mean, there's some symbolism, Warren, on this dollar.
Oh, absolutely. And trust me when I tell you that out on the trail we see the all-seeing eye. We see references to pyramids or pyramidal shapes, owls. Everything that you've talked about is out on the KGC trail. There's no question about it.
Next up, let's go to our wild card line. It's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Thank you. This question is for William. I'd like to get William's definition of the entity that the Templars worship, known as Baphomet or Baphomet. And was Baphomet a Rosicrucian or a Catholic? Is there a connection to those groups?
That's an awesome question. Thanks for asking it. The Knights Templar were persecuted by the church because they worshipped a head or a skull called Baphomet. And the Templars, it is claimed, believed that this skull could perform miracles. And the question is, what kind of a head or a skull has the ability, for example, they said the head could save them, that it could make riches, it could make the trees flower and make the land germinate. What kind of a head can make riches? We're talking about a body of wisdom, a skill, not a skull, that is capable, that enables the apprehender of this wisdom to transmute the elements. We're talking about alchemy, because it is alchemy that can make riches, that can make the land germinate. And it's ultimately concealed behind this symbolism, even within the skull and bones, of this idea of this ancient mystery school teaching about transmuting lead into gold, but ultimately, how do we transform the impure soul into a golden soul or a pure soul? That is the very basis for all of these secrets that we're talking about tonight. And it's symbolized once again by the skull, which is a skill, a school, a body of wisdom.
William, on that note, I just want to pipe into the listener who asked that question. You can see a huge sculpted skull in our book, Rebel Gold, Shadow of the Sentinel, pointing to an area where we think there's treasure in Arizona. And also, if you read a book called Oak Island Secrets by Mark Finnan, you'll see that Oak Island produced a large skull in the middle of this geometric T that's formed by these boulders. So definitely, it's a Templar sign and the importance of the skull that William was talking about.
Yeah, in Egypt, it was called the Head of God. And Mary Magdalene, in fact, as I pointed out earlier, was often painted holding a skull. This is not the cranium of an individual, be it John the Baptist or Jesus. This is a symbol for what in Egypt was the pillar of the high priest. In fact, that is one interpretation of the name Magdalene, which is Magdal, meaning pillar. Mary was the pillar of the tribe. And we find all kinds of references returning us to this idea of a pillar of enlightenment, as, for example, the pillar that's attached to the Ark of the Covenant. And you can, once again, if you visit my site, williamhenry.net, I present it on the front page of my site because it is the tree of life of the Garden of Eden. It is the primary symbol that represents the enlightenment of humanity.
In fact, the skull is the symbol of a master mason, skull and bones, the skull and crossbones. It's a symbol of the KGC. It's a symbol of the Skull and Bones Secret Society at Yale. And I think it all has to do with what William was describing.
I was going to say the Secret Society at Yale, of course, Skull and Bones, really hasn't been a big issue tonight. Is there a reason for that?
Well, because what they're doing here, George, is just simply passing along symbols that they more than likely don't even themselves know what it means. Craft, remember, means they can't remember what they're talking about. They're just passing along symbols without fully apprehending the original meaning of them, and that's how all this veil of secrecy gets placed around some of these organizations. They're just fraternal brotherhoods, essentially, that are, in my opinion, empty of the original mystery school teachings that upon which they were founded.
Was that you back there, Glenn, saying something?
Yeah, I just wanted to remind everyone that the all nine original members of the Knights Templar were originally members of the Fraternal Order of John, and for a reason. And I just wanted to contribute that. I know that people would say that the symbology is lost or that it's empty. I'm not so sure that it's so empty or that it's lost.
Next up, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're up. Hi there.
Yeah, I wanted to know if they had any kind of connection between the Masons or even the Templars about the Georgia stones that are just outside of Elberton, Georgia.
It's anybody like want
Stonehenge.
That? Anybody know about that?
You have to refresh my memory. I have heard of them, but I can't recall exactly the details right now.
I believe it's five individual monoliths with a top piece. It lines up geometrically also for the setting of the solstice and the equinoxes, and it has a warning in, I believe, seven to eight different languages.
That's right, and it aligns itself with the Cross of Hendaye written about by Jay Widener, a cross in southern France, very near Rennes-le-Château, that warns of a double cataclysm at the quote-unquote end of the world. And I think this is an important point to make here, too, George, because we've had several callers asking about what Albert Pike thought about Lucifer. What Albert Pike thought about Lucifer is really not really penetrating the ultimate mystery of what we're describing here. The great cross that these figures revered is actually a celestial alignment with the center of our Milky Way galaxy that occurs in 2012. Lucifer is the light that comes through that great cross, and this celestial alignment acts as a crucifix to fasten or bind this light to the earth plane. And both the Cross of Hendaye and these tablets that the gentleman is describing point to this moment in time when the light of God reappears on the planet.
You guys have done your homework, I'll tell you that. You, Glenn, William, and Warren, we've only got a few more minutes left. So once again, Glenn, mention your website. And you have a toll-free order number for your books as well.
I do. It's 888-904-9394. And it's ancientmanuscripts.com. And I put together a selective list of the masters who've written about the Templars. And remember that the secret for the Templars really originates in the 37 years following the death of Jesus and the massive movement to the West. And that's encapsulated in my CD, AD After the Death of Christ. And once again, what a delight to be with these two gentlemen. I've had a lot of fun.
William Henry, your website again, please.
My website is williamhenry.net, and my telephone number, 615 292-7863. And once again, I'm extending the special offer that if you order any of my books or other DVDs, I'll send you a complimentary copy of my brand new lecture, Stargate 2012. And I just wanted to mention one more thing, George, and that is on this Thanksgiving weekend, let's remember the pilgrims that came here on the Mayflower. And let's just remember that the Mayflower is the flower of light, the lily. And let's take a moment this weekend to celebrate the awakening, the enlightenment that America ultimately provides to each and every soul incarnate on this planet. And let's say a prayer for those that are also attempting to attain this ideal that is our birthright by virtue of living in this country.
Indeed. Thank you, William. And Warren, how about your website one more time?
Thanks, George. Thanks for having me on the show, and thanks to William and Glenn. The name of the book is Rebel Gold. That's the paperback on Amazon.com, out with Simon & Schuster. And the hardcover is Shadow of the Sentinel, One Man's Quest to Find the Hidden Treasure of the Confederacy. It's with Bob Brewer, my co-author. And, you know, we don't go as deep or far afield into these subjects as my colleagues here on the show. We try and stick to the Civil War period and its Templar background, but these are fascinating issues the other guys have raised on the show.
Warren's book is awesome,
indeed.
By the way. Absolutely awesome.
Well, all of you, you all three of you have done just a tremendous job, considering that we're on four separate lines, me and you three. So thanks again, Warren, William, and Glenn. Thank you so much.
Thanks, George.
Thank you, George. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Warren.
Great people. They know what they're talking about, don't they? For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition as we talk about Bigfoot. Until then, be safe, everyone.